Okay. So here we go. This is going to be recorded, so I'm going to push the magic buttons here and start to record the narration. Okay. Hit. Okay. We are on. Okay. Welcome to, I think, two... This recording is not nice. Anyhow, welcome to the session where we're going to talk about two papers on the issue of correlation, which if you're at the first general session, you know, you talked about the uncertainties in correlation all the way through. And I think what we're going to have here is two rather distinct approaches to the problem. And so I'll begin, and hopefully we'll have time for a discussion at the end of this. Okay, the title of my paper is The Common Shock Model for Correlated Insurance Losses. And what I want to do is I want to start off with the common shock idea, which is essentially I'm going to set it up this way, where I select a random number beta from a distribution with mean 1 and variance B. Okay? Now, for the loss in each line of insurance, okay, I want to multiply that by this random number beta. Okay? Now, the idea right there is I'm multiplying each loss in each line by beta. So what that's doing is it's causing losses to move together and hence get this phenomenon we call correlation. Now, you don't need to calculate the coefficient of correlation to do all this. You know, you just know that because you're multiplying the loss by the common factor, that the losses will be correlated, okay? But, you know, since people like to look at correlations, there's actually math out there that allows you to calculate the coefficient of correlation. And this is something that people who go through our early exams should know in one way or another. It's just simply the... sort of like the formula for unconditional variance in terms of conditional variances, and you can do the same thing for correlations. And so, this is actually a not a hard calculation to do, but in practice, you don't need to do it. Okay, now I want to continue this example with a couple of plots. Well, first of all. The idea right here is for the simplest way I can actually think of to illustrate this is to basically come up with the random variable beta taking on three values, 1 minus the square root of 3b, 1, and 1 plus the square root of 3b. And if you assign probabilities to beta 1 and beta 3, okay, what you'll find right here is that these probabilities are, you know, 1/6 for each of the two betas off to the side and 2/3 for the one in the middle. And if you actually do the calculations right here, you'll find that the expected value of beta is 1 and the variance of beta is b. Okay, that's just a simple algebraic calculation. Now, what I want to do here is actually do a simulation. In other words, I simulate losses X1 from one line of insurance and X2 from a second line of insurance. And what you'll find happening is that, since I multiply the losses in each line by the same beta, you'll see that, hey, these things look a little bit correlated. And for this right there, I had a B of 0.01. Okay, and you calculate the coefficient of correlation, it'll be 0.5. Now, if I increase the magnitude of B, now because I chose the simple beta that I did, you can see that this moves it, back and forth, back and forth. You increase that, the distance the betas are going apart. You can see how this would actually increase, okay, the correlation, visually. Okay, now, what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give the variables X a little bit more internal volatility. Now, here, I'm using, okay, the same, you know, B's, but the internal, the X's themselves are actually much more volatile. Now, you see the same thing going on as you go through these big, the more volatile lines, and you can see that in spite of the fact that the B, or the variance of the underlying betas, are the same, okay, what this does right there is it sort of gives you the idea that you can have actually smaller coefficients of correlation. Okay? And if I were to summarize, okay, the paper, this is the idea behind the whole thing. And, you know, and I could say, well, let's, Gary, you can get up now. But I want to go a little bit further in this. Now, the message behind this is that the correlation depends upon the volatility of the common shocks right here, has identified by, you know, this factor B. But it also depends upon the volatility of the lines of insurance. Okay? And which in turn depend upon things like the claim severity distribution, the claim count distribution, and which in really depends upon the size of the insurer. And so one thing right here is that if you think that the correlation is being caused by some kind of underlying, you know, random thing going on, or like inflation or something like that, what this tells you is you should not use the same correlation matrix, okay, for, okay, each insurer. And you would expect the smaller insurers to have, you know, less correlation. That's essentially what this is telling us. Okay, now what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of jazz up this model a little bit. And we are talking about the collective risk model, which has a claim count distribution at random and the claim severity distribution at random. And so I'm going to select a random variable, which I'll call chi, from a distribution with mean 1 and variance C. And then what I'll do is I'll select a claim count from a Poisson distribution with mean chi times, you know, the prior mean that you had for the claim count distribution. So now I'm doing the same trick with claim counts. Now for each claim, I'm going to select it from a distribution with mean mu and standard deviation sigma. And then the total loss right there is going to be the sum of all claims. Okay? Now, the size of the risk right there is going to be proportional to our expected claim count lambda. And the parameters of the claim severity distribution right there, I'm going to make the assumption that these are the same for all risk sizes or company sizes. I'm thinking of something like if you insure auto claims are going to be pretty much the same for a big company as for a small company. But what happens is that the bigger company will have more volume and hence larger lambda. Okay? Now, I'm also going to make the assumption that I'm actually going to test later on right there that this the C parameter is going to be the same for all risk sizes. Okay, in other words, there's some sort of underlying variability that sort of affects, you know, the industry in general. And it's going to be, you know, essentially the same thing. Now, we'll test these as we go on. Now, let's take a look at the implication of this assumption right here is that the behavior of the loss ratio, okay, has the risk size increases. So I use basically standard collective risk model type ideas to calculate the variance of the standard deviation of the loss ratio. And then divide that by the expected losses. Now, you just let lambda run off to infinity. You will see that essentially this part becomes, you know, we have a square root of this. This becomes much bigger than this thing. And so that approaches right here, the square root of C. Now, if you observe so if you observe right here large, you know, company results, you will see that no matter how big the company is, they will always have some sort of variance in their year-to-year losses. So this is really the sort of intuition that sort of underlies, you know, this choice of the model. Okay, now what I did right there is I actually plotted, this out on a graph. And if you chose a C value of 0.01 right there, you can see how the coefficient of the loss ratio, it for the smaller companies, it's going to basically be somewhat large, but it will generally disappear, go down to some sort of asymptotic level. Okay, now I'm going to introduce common shocks across all lines of insurance. So for the claim count, I'm going to introduce another little random variable called alpha with the expected value 1 and variance g. And for the claim severity, I'm going to introduce a second random variable. So I'm sort of taking this common shock idea and sort of applying it separately to claim severity and claim count distributions. Now, I'm going to also make the assumption right there that B and G are the same for all risk sizes, and that B and G are the same for all lines of insurance. Now, that's the assumption I made in this paper because I did not do this for, shall I say, a lot of lines of insurance. But in general, I've actually backed off on the this assumption in actually some of the practical work that I've done. But, you know, I just want to just say that this is going to be the consequences of the model we're going to be testing here. Now, what happens right here is you go ahead and see the effect of B and G, on the loss ratio. Now, what happens is that C, which is going to be the same for each, you know, line of insurance here, and you're going to see that if I set B and G as 0, you can see that this increases, the coefficient of variation of the loss ratio, a little. You know, it's noticeable. But the one thing I want to point out right here is that it's the B and the G parameters that are actually going to be driving the correlation. Okay, the C parameter is going to be individual for lines. Now, my particular choice of that, certainly should be suspect at this point. But again, right there, the essence of what this paper is doing is that it's testing it. And perhaps the underlying inspiration for the paper is that if correlation matters, you should see it in accounting data. And if it doesn't, we don't see it in accounting data, who cares whether it's there or not? But that's another sort of thought that was sort of underlying, the things that I've been doing here. But this is, now what this does right here is you just go ahead and check to see right here the effect of B and G on correlation. And you can see that for the smaller lines of business, this correlation is actually quite small. But as the lines of a business get larger right here, it will get, pretty large. Now, one thing I'd point out right here is that I've looked at a lot of correlation matrices that people are using, in, for, their internal model calculations, and this is probably a bit smaller than most people are using. So keep that in mind as we move on. Now, does correlation matter? What you have right there, suppose you consider the total loss over N lines of insurance, and you just simply write down the covariance matrix. Now, what happens here is the variance is going to be the sum of the diagonal elements right here, plus the off-diagonal elements. And so we have n diagonal elements and n squared minus n off-diagonal elements. And so what happens here is that even if these covariances are small, right here, as you increase, okay, the number of risks that are in a line, you're going to see that this n squared right there becomes pretty big, and hence this n squared times this small covariance here is going to dominate the numbers. Now let's see what this means graphically right here. Is that if you see the effect on correlation between two lines of insurance, you want to take a look at the coefficient of variation of, or the standard deviation, I guess that's what I'm looking at there, of the loss ratios. And you can see that for the small risks, okay, they're not a whole lot different, but you can see that, okay, that's sort of increasing the aggregate standard deviation a little bit. But now if you apply this to 10 lines, okay, all of a sudden, you know, this does cause, okay, a noticeable increase. Okay, so, and in many cases, you know, when you've got some common economic factors applying this to, you want to do your internal model for an insurance company, you know, they're affecting all lines at once. This is going to affect your results very noticeably. Now, okay, that's essentially what the model is telling us. Now, what I want to get to next is what I would call empirical tests of the models. And what I did is I looked at the U.S. Schedule P loss ratios for 55 insurers. Now, the one thing I did here, when you're looking at loss ratios, you've got two things going on, is that losses are varying over time and premiums due to underwriting pressure, underwriting cycle kind of things are varying over time. And what I did right there as we were doing this is we actually removed what we think were the premium effects. Okay, and you know, there's references that talk about exactly how we did this in the paper, but we wanted to remove these predictable changes that we attributed to underwriting cycle over time. So we're now just looking at the variance of the losses. Okay, now there's some difficulties with Schedule P data. One is that you've got catastrophes. Another thing right there is that we had to use what we called conventional loss development right here, so we probably understated the ultimate variability. And the other problem we had with the Schedule P data is that the severity distributions, okay, weren't necessarily the same for all insurers because of reinsurance. Okay, and we did some, as you'll see, we did some sensitivity tests on this sort of thing. Okay, now what I decided to use when we did this was we wanted to use commercial auto and personal auto. Commercial auto and personal auto aren't as affected by reinsurance as some of the other, say, long-tail general liability lines or even the property lines. Okay, and also it's not quite as affected by catastrophes, you know, like hurricanes, you know, cars move. And so, you know, they see a hurricane, you know, people generally get their cars out of the area. It's not completely true, but the idea that these were sort of the considerations that we did when we wanted to test this for, for the correlation study. Now, the model predicts right there how the standard deviation of the loss ratio should decrease with insurer size. Okay, so what we have is 10 years of data. For each of our companies, what we can do is calculate a loss ratio. And then with the joined lines here, what we did, okay, was calculated, what a collective risk model with the parameters, you know, C and G and B worked into it. And we actually had severity distributions that we developed from ISO data. And the other thing we noticed is about 85% of our commercial auto business right there writes a policy limit of $1 million. Okay. But, you know, there were some of the small companies, there may have been something at the smaller limit. So what I did right there was I actually ran two different collective risk model runs. And one was at the a limit of 1 million, and the other one was a limit, I think, of about 300,000. Okay, so that's the difference that the policy limit makes. And you can see right here that the data we got from these companies is that it does seem to behave pretty much, you know, has, okay, the model predicts. Okay, now, at the same time right there, I said, okay, let's simulate loss ratios based on the actual insurer sizes. And we can see that the actual data right here and the simulated data based on the model looked pretty much the same. You know, it's, you might, well, maybe, but, you know. You know, this is, we were not, you know, too upset, you know, with this kind of exercise. Okay, now, the next thing we did right there was, okay, the model also predicts that the coefficient of correlation will increase with insurer size. Okay? Now, this turned out to be very interesting. We actually calculated the coefficient of insurer size of the insurer loss ratios between the personal auto and the commercial auto. And they were all over the place, as you can see. Now, the reason this line isn't what I would call smooth is because we actually use for this the average size of the commercial auto and the personal auto, and they didn't always have the same volumes, and so that made this line jagged up a little bit. But still, at the same time right there, you can see right here that calculating just simply coefficients of correlation right here, so, whoa, okay, we can't make any sense out of this. Okay, now what I did right there was I said, okay, let's suppose my model is correct. And I said, okay, let's actually simulate losses from the model that I've more or less hypothesized here. You know, you might see sort of an increase, but you definitely see volatility, okay, in the calculations of the coefficient of correlation. Now, this should be, anybody who's actually tried to do this should have seen something like this, and this is why the coefficient of correlation right there, okay, has been such a difficult problem. In a sense right there, by trying to calculate this, you get numbers that just go flying all over the place, and some of them are actually, you know, fairly high, you know, 0.8, but then there's some that are down here in the area of minus 0.8. And this is true for that same model that I projected, you know, the coefficient of correlation sort of maxing out at around 0.16. Okay, now, so let's just go ahead and, you know, let's talk about this, you know, into perhaps a little bit more depth. Okay, the plot of the predicted versus the actual coefficients is, I probably shouldn't say at best, you know, I had, shall I say, in your extreme, in your dreams. Ah, yes. Or, Ira?
You computed the correlation coefficients. Did you use 10 years?
Yeah. Exactly the same way that we did it with the empirical data. Okay. And, you know, and that's based on the assumption that this model I have is correct. Okay. And so this is basically, so what we want to do is we need to dig into this whole thing, you know, quite a bit more deeply than that, you know, to really test the model. Okay. Now, what we want to do right here is I'm going to add on the assumption that these common shocks, whatever they are, they, you know, affect all insurers simultaneously. What we're doing is that before when you simulate, you're just simulating results from a single insurance company, but we're looking at empirical correlations from multiple companies. And so let's just, I just had to be, you know, mathematically correct, add the fact that I'm sort of adding that assumption that has the way these common shocks work. Okay, now what I want to do right here is I want to come up with a come up with my own definition of loss ratio, which is the loss, the random loss over its expected value. So we would expect the expected value of R to be 1. Okay, but now if you go through the math of the model right here, and you calculate the expected value of R from the first line, minus 1, times this, you basically calculate this expected value here. Okay, and you go through the math, and you find out it's going to be this thing, this B plus G plus BG. Okay, and so we're looking at aggregate losses here, and so that's, I mean, this is math, that's, you know, basically demonstrated in the paper. Now, so now what happens here is that if you were to calculate the average of a whole bunch of cross products right here, a consequence of this model is that it's going to be pretty much independent of insurer sizes. That's one of the things that sort of pops out of this. There's no lambda sitting in that equation. Okay, now, so what we have here is, now we've already demonstrated, okay, that the standard deviation of loss ratios decreases, okay, with insurer size. Okay, then if we want rho to increase with size, what we have to do is we have to show that this numerator here does not also decrease in size. Okay, now, the data gathered right there. What we did right here was we got R1 and R2 and the expected losses for taken for the same year with different insurers. Okay, and we, if you got, I think it was, we had on somewhere in the neighborhood of about 50 insurers in this. And if you were to take all the R1s and R2s, you know, pairs of these things, right here, you've got over 15,000 pairs. Okay, so what we can do is that we can then do a regression right here of, you know, the R1 and R2 against average expected loss. And what we get here is a slope of about 1.95 times 10 to the minus 10. It's not negative. And so essentially what we're saying here is that from this, we're saying this increasing coefficient of correlation is consistent with the Schedule P data. Now let me just drop back right here. The standard deviations are decreasing with size, and this seems to be pretty small here. Okay, and so what we're saying right here is that this is actually tends to, that this means that those, the expected value of those cross products are independent of size. That's kind of what we're saying here. Now let's go a little bit further and try to estimate what the, that sum B plus G plus BG is. Okay, we take the average of, okay, these 15 or 16,000 cross products here. And we find that the average right here is about 0.00054. Okay? Now, is this statistically significant bigger than zero? And if we're going to have correlation, we want this to be you know, significantly bigger than zero. Now, I am pretty sure that had I tried to look up a test for such a thing right here, we never would have found something in a book about this, you know, a standard statistical test of significance, because the variance of the loss ratios and the non-normality of the loss ratios was something that we had to be concerned about, okay? But the way I almost always do significance tests is that I simulate the null hypothesis. Okay, and essentially do a computer simulation. And then in doing this, I use the insurer size as measured by the expected losses as input, assume the loss ratios have a log normal distribution, and did 200 simulations where I calculated the average of these 16,000 pairs. Okay? And the result of this, right there, is that this slope right here is certainly out of any critical region for the H1. And the actual slope was below 49 of the 200. So the idea right here is the slope of the regression line that we did was close to zero, which is what we'd expect. We're saying that, you know, that ratio is going to be constant. That's one of the assumptions we have. Okay, we want to test the hypothesis that this sum of b plus g plus bg equals zero against this, and we get this estimate here of this average of about 0.00540. And then when we actually simulated the 200 times, the top value we got was 0.00318. Okay, now these are small numbers, and you know, and people have suggested that perhaps I should have parameterized this thing so the numbers look bigger, but it doesn't matter. So what this says right here, that the positive correlation coefficient right there is consistent with the Schedule P data. In other words, essentially what we've done here is that we have taken, shall I say, the results of a whole bunch of companies and calculated a correlation coefficient by fitting this model to it. Before, when you're just trying to calculate this with one company, you see that the correlation coefficients go flying all over the place. And so if you're going to get any kind of estimate right here of the correlation, you really need to combine the results with a model fitted from results from a lot of companies. That's essentially what's different about this between that and the standard sort of thing. To summarize the results right here, okay, the version of the collective risk model, C is the same for all risk size, B and G generate correlation, is consistent with what we're actually observing in the accounting data. And this is, you know, what I would call a rough first start at this. Okay, and the idea is it does generate correlations that, you know, that we can do, but this is just simply a first order approximation. I actually did this research probably about 2 or 3 years ago. Maybe, you know, parts of it even sooner. But, you know, I think that I could think of right now ways that I would improve upon this. Okay, but anyhow, this is where we are when I wrote paper. But the point right here is it takes a lot of data to do this test statistically. And as we pointed out right there, when you have this, the correlation does matter, even if it's smaller than, you know, a lot of people seem to be guessing. Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about other approaches, and there, Gary may have something to say about this when he goes on right there. Essentially, the kind of approach, you know, we have been advocating here is what we call structural approaches. In other words, we have the common shock as one sort of way of generating correlations. Another way of generating correlations, which is completely different, but it still falls in the class of structural models, is the catastrophe models. What drives correlation in catastrophe models? Hurricanes? Well, you're insuring a whole bunch of houses all in the same hurricane path. Okay, and that's the sort of thing that's going on. And the other thing that people are doing right there is that they'll say select pretty much from your imagination or somewhere, and people can, you know, debate this with me if you want. The idea of using a constant correlation matrix. That is very inconsistent, okay, with, you know, the results that came out of this approach. Okay, now there's copulas. One of the things that they focus on is what they call tail correlation. Now, the question I have, and maybe Gary, you can address this one, is that are the structural models better? You know, like I think in the case of catastrophes, I believe they are. Now, for some of the other things, you know, there's some open for debate there. So that's essentially, you know, the kind of issues that pop up with correlation. Okay, and that's the end. And let's see, do we have time for questions? My watch went out right here. We got time for maybe about 5 minutes of questions. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Yes.
And just with the way that some companies allocate ceded recoveries and IBNR can be a big part, you have things like finite reinsurance. Those net loss ratios to me sometimes don't seem real or valuable. So I'm kind of curious why they use gross loss ratio.
Well, Schedule P. Do they have gross loss ratio? I don't think so. Okay. We were looking at the triangles to do the development. Okay, that sort of went into our choice of you know, commercial auto right there. I think commercial auto seems to be less hit with some of those than some of the other more exotic lines of insurance. We've actually done similar studies on data reported to ISO, and in part right there, because this was a public paper, I wanted to use publicly available data, and again, right there, like I said before, you should want to, you know, you got to be able to see correlations in the published data. And if you don't, nobody's going to care. Okay, but yeah, that is a good point. And, you know, we do get the direct data from ISO. Okay, any other questions? Yeah, Gary, then I'll get back.
You never said that beta has to be positive. I looked in these models. You said beta has to have
B.
Beta. Beta okay. Is a random variable.
Yeah, right.
It has to have mean one and positive variance, but you never said it has to be positive. I guess in most of these applications, it's going to be positive.
Yeah, I mean, every application I've used, it's always been positive.
But if okay. you make B big enough, then you have some chance at it. Well, it depends.
It depends on which distribution I used. You know, this was a simple one. In practice, I have actually used something like where its beta would have a gamma distribution and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, again, right there, I considered this. I just wanted to get a simple idea out there and, you know, keep the math as simple. I'm not sure I succeeded as well as I would have liked, but anyhow, it's all there. Okay. Ira, you had a...
Two other reasons for correlation, one of which I think you took into account was premium adequacy. And I'm not sure how exactly you accounted for that, but if premiums go up in both lines and down in both lines...
I tried to eliminate it. I tried to eliminate it. And the correlations and loss ratios, okay, are going to be higher just simply because of underwriting cycle. And I should mention right there that when I actually looked at the empirical loss ratios, those were smooth premiums or level premiums.
Okay, and the other factor is reserving philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah, we actually looked at the paid data, okay, and we did the development ourselves.
Okay.
Okay. If I had, you know, lately I've been doing stuff on loss reserve variability, and if I were to redo this thing now, again, right there, this is a few years old, okay, I thought, you know, when they had a new journal coming out, I said, well, let's try to get something in the first thing, and so here's something I largely had written. So there was a little bit of that logic that went into this. But right now, I think what I would do is I would actually, you know, handle the uncertainty and loss reserves in a much different way, and probably more sophisticated way. Like I said, this is just a start.
Yeah,
Okay? But I think there are some conclusions we can draw from this. Okay, with that, we'll turn this over to Gary. And we've got to do some technical things. These are being recorded in sync with the PowerPoint show. Okay. This is taking some time to save, Gary, so, okay.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a big file.
We did a lot of talking.
Yeah, it could be 20 megabytes. Not more than that. It could be 100 megabytes.
Well, we'll see in a minute here. This is freezing on us.
Sometimes control alt will leave it unfreezing.
Well,